Welcome back to an all-new episode of Dirtcast. I am your co-host, Madeline Davies.
I am your other co-host, Megan Reynolds.
And today, we will be joined by our very own Hazel Sills to talk about the looming presence of the male producer and how they oftentimes get credit for a female musician's entire catalog.
A cool story.
But before we get into that, I just want to say we are recording this on Election Day.
We are.
So maybe right now you're listening and you're in such a bad mood.
Hopefully
because things
not.
Did not turn out the way you wanted them to.
Right.
Or maybe you're in a great mood.
You're ecstatic.
Because things turned out pretty good. We don't know that right now.
We can do many things, but we cannot tell the future, which is really upsetting.
Yes. So please, if we sound tone deaf or like we're not addressing something, it's because we truly don't know about it yet.
Because both of us voted this morning.
One positive thing I will say is my polling place was packed.
So was mine.
And it was like people of all ages and like, I don't know, people were like excited to vote, which is always—
That's like fun.
It like reminded me— It's very different, of course, but it reminded me of, like, the first time I ever got to vote was for Barack Obama in 2008. First presidential election.
I was thinking. Mine is earlier than that.
But just, like, that same just, like, yes, I'm here and I'm doing my civic duty.
Yeah. I've been voting for some time.
I mean, keep it up.
Thanks. I'll do my best. Yeah, my polling place was also very packed. And the woman who was directing us to the scanning machines, she was like, it's been like this since 6 a.m. It was very crowded. And it was nice to see. And then it started pouring after I left.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe the sky had to let out some emotion.
The sky, you know, it did. It did.
How are you doing otherwise?
I'm hanging in there. I have a couple of days off coming up.
Do you have a plan, or are you just going to do nothing?
Well, one of the days I have to go to the DMV. Maddie's look on her face right now is like, that's not what you do in a day off. And I understand it is not. But my state ID, because I don't know how to drive, is expired. It expired on my birthday. So I have to go get a new something. Perhaps I will be bold and take a permit test.
Ooh.
Watch out, America. If I get behind the wheel of a fucking car, no one should be on the road.
I drove around a New York City block for the first time.
Was it terrifying?
Actually, where I live is really residential, and it was fine.
Oh, yeah. No, actually,
but I was very scared.
Quite nervous.
I have a driver's license, to be clear.
Maddie knows how to drive.
I just learned how to drive in the Midwest, where, like, the roads are, like, as wide as the plains.
So I'm going to go to the DMV, and then I might get a new tattoo, and I might get a facial.
Girl, plans.
That's it.
Plans, plans, plans.
That's it. I cannot have, like, unstructured time off because I am psychotic.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm okay. I mentioned to you before that on the train on the way here, a woman in her 50s offered me her seat.
It's fucked up, dude.
And it has me, like, a little shook.
Okay.
Only because I'm, like, wearing, like a dress that's kind of sack-shaped.
Right.
So I wouldn't begrudge her for thinking that I could be pregnant.
You don't look pregnant.
I'm just saying, like, if she was just like, I can't tell because this dress is whatever, and, like, her belly was swollen from eating Thai food.
Leave it alone.
No, it's fine. It's nice. Okay. Believe me, I'm not, like, feeling bad about this.
All right.
But I just was like, is that what it is? Because I have had the internal debate of, like, is this person pregnant?
Yeah.
Should I give them my seat?
Right.
And usually it's like, if you really can't figure it out, like,
don't do it.
Sometimes what I'll do is I'll just get up.
And then see if they take it.
And then, or just, like, leave it open, you know? But if I was, I would definitely be in the, like, I don't know stage.
Right.
So I'm not mom.
She's not. She's not.
But yeah, it was just like one of those things where I was just like, that was so weird. And then an elderly man with a cane came on the train.
Oh, boy.
And she didn't offer the seat to him.
The fuck? Dude, I don't know.
It was very weird.
You want me to fight anybody, I will.
No, I mean, like, she was being nice.
She was.
I just was deeply confused.
If you, again, my offer still stands.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Yes. Go track her down.
All right, well, I've offered to fight at least three people today, and it's only 11:14 in the morning.
Yeah.
It'll be a long day.
Gonna hit up Pilates later.
You know what we should talk about? Because I think there's a lot to talk about.
Fuck yeah, there is.
Let us get right the fuck into the dirtiest dirt.
thank you next.
Thank you next.
And I'm not saying that to move on to the next subject.
No, no.
We're going to be talking about that Ariana Grande song that
for
she dropped on Saturday.
Probably a while. Here is what happened. As we know, fucking Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande broke up. They have been, I think, very publicly messy about this. Just in the way that one does when you are young, were previously in infatuation slash love and also engaged. Last week on Thursday, Pete fake proposed to Maggie Rogers, who was the musical guest on Saturday Night Live this past week.
Hey, Maggie. I'm Pete.
Hey, Pete.
You want to get married?
No.
Oh, for three.
And Ariana saw that and then tweeted, but deleted, "For somebody who claims to hate relevancy, you sure love clinging to it, huh?" Which is really, when I saw that, I think I screamed in my room. And then about a half an hour this past weekend before Saturday Night Live aired, Ariana released a song called Thank You, Next. It is great.
I also think it is a bop.
Yeah.
The thing that I am like a little bit confused by.
Okay.
I can't tell if it's like generous or petty because I don't think it's like a mean song.
Okay. Okay. I have an answer for you.
I think. A real one?
I
like
do.
A confirmed?
Not a confirmed answer.
You have a theory.
I have a theory. I like to call all of my theories answers. Well, I wrote about this yesterday because I've been thinking about it since I heard this. I've listened to the song like a million times. Clearly, I'm in like a place irrelevant. I think that it is both. I think the lyrics are a little petty.
So what lyrics are petty?
I guess it's, I mean, I guess the thing that I think is the most petty about it is, like, the title. Thank You, Next is
yeah, I mean, when I saw the title, beautiful. I thought it was going to be, like, a really like a mean song.
Right.
But it's, like, not a mean song.
No. It opens.
Thought I'd end up with Sean, but it wasn't a match. Wrote some songs about Ricky, now I listen and laugh. Even almost got married, and for Pete, I'm so thankful. Wish I could say thank you to Malcolm.
I mean, she's speaking like someone who has been in therapy for a minute. And then I think she's confirmed that, like, after the Pete breakup, she had been.
She said that she's been in therapy the whole time.
Yeah.
She was like, actually, like, therapy has, like, saved my life.
Yeah.
Right, but where is that petty?
I think Thank You, Next is petty in its title, but then that's it, the title.
Yeah, that's it.
I guess it's not necessarily petty to, like, thank all of your exes for letting you realize that you were— that you could be, like, the you that you needed to be your whole life or whatever. It's motivational, but I do think that on some level, I think there's, like, a nibble in there somewhere. I mean, it sounds like she's, like, processed this, or she is in the process. She's in the process of processing her breakup and, like, moving forward and trying to fucking go on this tour, which I stupidly did not buy tickets for, but now we'll find on StubHub.
Pete Davidson also addressed the breakup Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live.
And the last thing I will say is I know some of you are curious about the breakup, but the truth is it's nobody's business.
Since when? He was my daughter's business.
I know.
And sometimes things just don't work out, and that's okay. She's a wonderful, strong person, and I genuinely wish her all the happiness in the world. Now, please go vote on Tuesday, all right?
I felt like that song and that statement are kind of in line where it's just, like, fairly respectful.
Right, but I mean, Pete, again, from what I can see, and the only, I've been thinking about this a lot because I'm probably going to write about it for the end of year. Pete has been processing this in the way that I wouldn't expect him to do it any other way. I would say this as if I know him, but I don't. I feel like he's been saying kind of shitty things on SNL. He's just been, like, milking it for, like, content.
Their relationship.
Their relationship, the aftermath of their relationship. Like, I would like to think this is, like, the end. Like, they've both said their piece.
Yeah.
But she got, like, the last word.
For sure.
Which is a powerful, I mean, nothing feels as good as getting the last word, if you ask me.
So another thing I want to focus on is, of her exes, which one taught her love?
One taught me love.
Which one taught her patience?
Taught me patience.
Which one taught her pain?
Taught me pain.
Do you want to say what you think first, and then I'll say what I think?
I think Big Sean probably taught her love.
Okay.
I think that Mac Miller probably taught her pain because of, you know, him tragically dying of an overdose and dealing with addiction throughout their relationship.
Yep.
I don't know enough about Ricky.
He was a dancer.
I know that. I know he was, like, one of her backup dancers. Mm-hmm. But, like, the fact that she says that she listens and laughs about her songs about Ricky seems like she doesn't take it super seriously.
I think that was, like, an early relationship. Like, yeah, that's my guess.
And I don't know who Patience is.
Pete Davidson, 1,000%. Dating Pete Davidson seems like an exhausting but occasionally rewarding undertaking. And I imagine that you would need a lot of patience to date Pete Davidson.
You were singing a different tune a few months ago. I also think, though, what patience if you only last less than 6 months?
I mean,
That's not patience.
That's not patience, but I do think Pete Davidson seems like the kind of person who requires a lot of fucking patience.
So much projection.
I was talking about this with people at work yesterday, and that was how it broke down. I think that Mac Miller could have also taught her patience.
Yeah. Because also, getting engaged after 2 weeks of dating is not patient.
No, that's fucked up.
I don't think that equals patience.
Again, Pete Davidson just strikes me as the kind of person who even just from the jump, you need patience to deal with.
To Pete's credit, he did change the narrative pretty quickly.
He
redirected it. Because in that same bit, he was making fun of Dan Crenshaw, who is a Republican congressional candidate from Texas, lost an eye in Iraq in 2012.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, man.
Yo, hold on. You may be surprised to hear he's a congressional candidate from Texas and not a hitman in a porno movie. I'm sorry. I know he lost his eye in war or whatever.
People got upset because, again, like, he's a wounded vet. But I just want to say he also is anti-choice, pro-gun, pro-wall, and anti-gay on the grounds of religious beliefs, so I don't give a fuck.
Yep.
One thing I thought we could talk about in this realm is, like, what our favorite or maybe just notable breakup songs are.
A song that I listen to a lot that I know is a breakup song, and I think it's a good song because it has a message that I enjoy, is It's Not Right, But It's Okay.
It's not right, but it's okay. I'm gonna make it anyway. Pack your bag.
I love that song.
Because it really applies to so many things aside from, like, some idiot cheating on you or whatever. Many things in this life are not right, but
I mean,
ultimately,
that song is, like, definitely about it cheating.
Yeah, well, because there's, like, a line in it about, like, the receipts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
To be clear. I think all of our listeners
crystal.
Want to know that. Taylor Swift, of course, is, like, the queen of writing about breakups. Like,
yeah.
We're never, ever, ever getting back together.
Sure.
Is about Jake Gyllenhaal, as we all know. And then Dear John is about John Mayer.
Yikes.
We're Never Getting Back Together is a song that I think is actually pretty good until it gets to the point where she's like, and then I, like, called him and
the spoken word interlude.
I truly hate when she does that.
I don't like a spoken word interlude.
Which really bums me out.
There is, of course, a song that I enjoy very much that I think is probably fun to sing at karaoke, Before He Cheats by Carrie Underwood.
Yeah, that's a great one.
It's a really
good
like song.
So fiery.
It's super fun. There's Justin Timberlake's Cry Me a River, which I enjoyed for a period of time in college and have not listened
famously
to since.
Famously about Britney Spears.
Is insane to me.
They used her a doppelganger in the video.
They did.
That video is deeply creepy.
I haven't seen it probably since the early 2000s.
I mean, it's basically he like has sex with a woman in his ex-girlfriend's apartment and videotapes it and then has it play when she walks in because,
I remember now.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
I'm also a big fan of Justin Bieber's Love Yourself.
I know my own, 'cause if you like
the way you look that much. Oh, baby, you should go and love yourself.
Best Thing I Never Had by Beyoncé. The way that the song is feels very, like, motivational to me, just yeah. because it's a little upbeat.
Also, she turns out great.
Yeah, she's fine. I mean, most of these breakup songs, the person singing is usually like, I'll be okay. Like, I'm fine.
I do find some of, like, the Taylor Swift allusions.
Yeah.
To be so funny, because it just seems really out of character for the person she's singing about.
I know very little about her catalog, because she's also...
On your list.
My list is mercurial. It changes every day.
I don't know. There's, like, a lot of songs about, like, Harry Styles, and it's all like, ooh, he's a bad boy. And I'm just like, ew. Oh, I think he's just, like...
Just a dude.
I mean, he's a smoking hot dude.
Yeah, it's true.
And, like, she got, like, a doppelganger to play him in the Trouble video, although I don't think that song is about him, technically.
Isn't Into the Woods, Out of the Woods yeah. song about him, about their snowmobile accident or whatever? Yeah.
You were looking at me. That's how it goes.
Oh, thank you. You were looking at me. That is how. Oh, that's. Yeah, okay.
All of country music is basically angry breakup songs like murder ballads. Like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend by Miranda Lambert.
I'm not familiar with much of Miranda's work.
Well, she can get real fired up. There's a song that she does that's also like a breakup song, but sort of reframed, called Mama's Broken Heart. And
okay.
It's about like she like cuts her own bangs because she's like drunk.
Nice.
I cut my bangs with some rusty kitchen scissors. I screamed his name till the neighbors called the cops.
And it's written by my number one girl, Kacey Musgraves.
Wow. Look at that. That's nice. I like that. That's all we have on this subject specifically.
I would like to break up with this topic.
We are splitting up. We are amicably parting with this topic. Let us move on.
We wish it all the best.
We wish it all the best. I wish you the most happiness.
It's only
literally don't
the
call
business
me.
Between oh. us and them.
Right. Don't call me for 6 months.
Please respect our privacy at this time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
On Keeping Up with the Kardashians, we got to see Khloe Kardashian find out about Tristan Thompson's cheating. Kylie is the one who told her in a text message. But it was funny because everybody basically found out through TMZ. And so we got to see the reactions of everyone as they got, like, the push notifications, basically. And this, if you recall, was on the eve of her birth.
Oh, that's right. The timing was beautiful.
Honestly... It's like I'm in shock. We love Tristan. Like, this is just nothing that we suspected. We thought she finally found her, you know, Prince Charming, happy ending.
Khloe Kardashian was very, very active on Twitter during the episode, tweeting about, like, how emotional the experience was, which, yes, understandable. Like, mm-hmm. one, you are 9 months pregnant, and two, your pro basketball player boyfriend is out bucking around. Probably not for the last time.
True.
She was like, thank God a camera was not with me in Cleveland. I won't put in writing what I did, but let's just say he's lucky I was 9 months pregnant, which is very strange.
I'm trying to parse
that. There's so much that you can like.
Who could say what that means?
And then she also said, I love filming for the show and I'm proud that we are all strong and brave enough to be vulnerable, but we have to start airing shows closer to real time. This episode is about 7 months old, and it's a lot to relive over again, but maybe I need to.
It's a really good point. That shit sucks, man. I mean, they've signed a blood oath to be on E! For the rest of eternity, but that is a valid point. That blows. What was nice is that on the episode that they aired this, they showed also where all of the sisters were when they found out.
Yeah, and Kendall was going skydiving with Scott Disick. Yeah. Just a natural situation.
A normal thing that you do. Kim was filming a confessional. Kylie was getting her makeup done.
Rob was under the bridge where they left him.
Yeah, Rob was like counting his Arthur George socks and like wondering when his mom would pick up his calls.
Also, to like throw a monkey wrench into things.
Love a wrench.
Is the rumor that the Kardashians actually knew about this for months and that it was... Chris kind of controlling when the images came out.
Right.
So that it could have the most, like, oomph for their show.
Oh,
But yeah, so I think that's kind of interesting to consider when you think about
certainly
their reactions mm-hmm. and Chloe's, although I feel bad for her. On the website affidavit, mm-hmm. Andrea Long Chu wrote a,
oh yeah,
safe to say, scathing
a
review,
real scorcher,
of Jill Soloway's book, She Wants It.
Oh, Lord.
I recommend everybody read it just because it's like a fiery piece of writing.
It's just, it feels very nice
very
to read.
Very spicy.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel weird talking about the book since I haven't read it. But one of the most damning things that there's really no way to explain itself around is Soloway tells the story of when Trace Lissette, who is on Transparent, came out against Jeffrey Tambor saying that he had sexually harassed her on set. And this actually was the second accusation. The first one was his assistant, Van Barnes. The conversation they had, according to Soloway,
right,
this is not projected. I will read to you because it is fucking terrifying.
It's
not terrifying.
It's
fucking
just, like,
so
insane.
Gross.
Yeah.
And like for like an ally and like someone whose whole thing
the
is like
mess.
Lifting up women and LGBTQ people and like marginalized people, it's really telling.
Mm.
So this is from the book. If Trace released a statement, it would be over for Jeffrey. And that meant Moira, the show, our TV family, everything. Soloway says to her, I can't believe you're doing this. And then Lissette said, well, that happened to me.
Right.
Going on, Lissette added, I had to tell my story, but I said in the statement that I wanted the show to continue. This is Soloway. But the idea of the show will be tarnished now in everyone's mind. In middle America, when people think of trans people, there's still so much suspicion, and Moira became this beautiful symbol of transness, and now you're laying this imagery out there of her being a predator. Suddenly, I started crying, I being Jill Soloway, and she was horrified. I'm the victim and you're crying, she demanded. She was right. I was sitting across from her, frozen with fear. I tried to stop myself from crying, like Michael in The Godfather. I tried to play it stoic and cool. I didn't say, Fredo, after all I've done for you, I said, I wish you luck. And then I walked away. An hour later, the article came out.
It Yikes. Is, fucked up.
Galling to
it's
me.
It's so bad.
To tell, like, an actual trans woman and trans activist that it's more important to uphold the image of Jeffrey Tambor playing a trans woman, especially, like, for what they proposition the show as.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing, and even to compare it to The Godfather, which, by the way, that's Godfather dose, Jill.
Mm, thanks.
Is a little bit crazy because, have you seen the movie?
No.
Okay. Well, so basically, Fredo is Al Pacino's brother,
okay,
and he betrays the family in a
sure
very extreme way.
Okay.
And then they have Fredo killed. So it's a really weird
that's
comparison.
That's shitty. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
Jill Soloway, man.
All of the rest of the stuff in this review, I was like, okay, I could see how some of this could be subject to interpretation.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, again, out of context, I don't know.
Correct.
But it's like, there is no way you can contextualize that story beyond just being horrible.
But yeah, exactly. Good stuff.
I did love the first couple seasons of Transparent. I thought it was such a good show.
I watched whatever season it was that ended with Judith Light singing.
Yeah, that was
the third
season. That scene of Judith Light singing, like destroyed me.
Amazing.
So I get, like, the disappointment, like, oh,
no,
the show
totally
is going to be different. But also, suck it up. Like,
yeah,
you're rich.
If you're, like, so creative.
Yeah, you have, like,
and, like,
another show.
A creator, figure it out. This is a nice little thing that happened over the weekend. Rebel Wilson is starring in a romantic comedy called Isn't It Romantic? She has claimed that she was the first ever plus-size girl to be the star of a romantic comedy. She made this claim on Ellen, where everyone makes all of their
claims,
where I would like to go to make many claims, and Instagram, another place where people love to claim things. Lots of people were like, hey, ma'am, that's not true. Queen Latifah and Monique have been in romantic comedies, like, just FYI.
Yeah.
And
also, a little movie called Shallow Hal.
Okay. Alrighty, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you for your time. See, I was wondering what you were waiting to say, and it was that. So a lot of people were like, all right, guess what? That's not true. Here's some examples. The examples that were presented were The Last Holiday, which starred Queen Latifah in 2006, and Monique was in a movie called Fat Girls, which also came out in 2006. But Rebel Wilson and Monique got into, like, a conversation on Twitter. Here's what Rebel Wilson said. She said, hey, girl, yeah, I of course know of these movies, but it was questionable as to whether, one, technically those actresses were plus size while filming those movies, or two, technically those films are categorized / billed as a studio rom-com with a sole lead. So there's a slight gray area.
I will say I did think when I think of Queen Latifah in Just Right, I would see her as being like technically plus size but not fat.
Right.
So I could see that being like actually kind of a gray area.
Right.
That's me just splitting hairs.
Far be it from me to tell anybody what to do, though I do love to do it. It's usually best in these situations, I think, if someone is like, hey, maybe you're wrong.
Yeah.
Just to be like, oh, hey, maybe I am wrong.
Yeah, it's like when Sam Smith said
easy.
That he was like the first gay person to win an Oscar.
And like 25 people were like, excuse me.
Yeah. The guy who directed Milk was like, oh.
Except pardon. Hello. Everybody needs to think for 20 to 60 seconds before they say words out loud.
I mean, I could see just like saying that off the cuff, but then you just have to be like, oh, whoops, I was wrong. And
that's true,
promote
yeah.
those movies.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Another thing I saw on Twitter, this was Rebecca Carroll, who you should follow. She's very smart.
She is.
She was noting the similarities between this and the Amy Schumer movie, I Feel Pretty.
Ah.
And how they're both about white women who hit their heads and then wake up in a world where everybody's attracted to them and how it's not like that revolutionary of an idea.
No, it's not.
I think just based on the trailer, there's like a little bit more to this one because it's not just like about men being attracted to her.
Right.
It's about making fun of rom-com
She's
tropes.
Stuck in a rom-com, I think, is the
She
premise.
Literally says, I'm stuck in a
yeah,
rom-com.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
And so I feel like that is more the trope of this one.
Yeah.
But also, I agree that like it's kind of a tired concept. Although, I bet money she ends up with Adam Devine at the end instead of
a hottie, right. You're probably right. You know, I lost the last bet that we made, but that was a bet I was born to lose, I think. Again, the two takeaways that any celebrity should take from this podcast is think before you speak, and we wish you the best.
Yeah, but then this podcast would not be on.
So keep doing what you're doing. We love it.
Put that foot in your mouth.
Eat the foot.
Sitting in our studio is the littlest witch, our dear friend Hazel Sills, who is here to talk about her article about Jack Antonoff and kind of the role of the male producer and the way that male producers oftentimes overshadow the female artists that they're working with.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Hello, Hazel.
Hi.
So, Hazel, you wrote this piece called Jack Antonoff and the Unrelenting Shadow of the Male Producer, and I know that you had been thinking about writing this for a while. Why had this been something you'd been thinking about?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it because Jack Antonoff, who's an artist in his own right, he does work as Bleachers, and he was in that band Fun, period.
Period.
His work as a producer and a songwriter has kind of been getting more high profile over the past few years. He's worked with Taylor Swift and Carly Rae Jepsen, and he co-produced and co-wrote Lorde's Melodrama, and now he's working with Lana Del Rey and maybe the Dixie Chicks.
What?
And, yeah. They posted Instagrams of each other in the studio. This is news
upset.
To Megan.
Lots of stuff is news to me. I'm very
and,
upset.
Okay, only one of us read your article.
I read it last week. Okay, you know what? Carry on, Miss Sills. Thank you.
So he has been doing a lot of press for his work with other artists. And he's always struck me in interviews he just loves to talk about how much he works with women and how much he prefers to work with women and how when he thinks about the songs he wants to write, he doesn't think about them in a men's voice. He thinks about them, you know, women singing them.
Right.
Hard to imagine someone who dated Lena Dunham not being able to shut the fuck up about their worldview.
And, yeah, but I
think— They're perfectly suited.
I think that's exactly it, is he really can't kind of shut up about it, all of his collaborations with women. And then that's kind of led to a lot of press and media coverage of him as this kind of like the secret sauce to all of these women and their success as musicians. So he is just kind of this producer who I think has earned the reputation for kind of being like a nice guy producer who helps women, you know, be the best they can be. But then he gets all these profiles where it's like, no, Jack Antonoff is the real reason why Melodrama is so good, or, you know.
It's like Jack Antonoff got the New Yorker Festival slot. Lana Del Rey just came.
Exactly. Yeah. It's stuff like that. So he's just kind of gotten on my nerves, and the narrative around him has gotten on my nerves. So that's kind of where this piece came from.
I feel like we cannot talk about Jack Antonoff without mentioning that he lived at home well into his late 20s and then
like 27.
Recreated his childhood bedroom in his tour bus.
Yeah, and took it on tour, which is very like, it's kind of a premature exercise in like myth making.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, this is where it happened. Yeah.
It's a little early for a myth to be made about.
I think also it is kind of funny how if you think about how we tend to idolize and like nostalgize, is that a word? I don't know. People know what I'm trying to say.
They do. They do.
That it's like the way we do this, that I can see how that will one day become just like a fascinating quirk as opposed to just like a dorky ass quality, which is how it is now.
Yes.
But I like some Jack Antonoff produced songs.
No, I do too. And I mentioned that in my piece. Like, I do like a lot of his production and obviously the artists that he works with, but I just don't like how the media kind of centers him in those narratives.
Totally. Right.
It's like, you know, Lana Del Rey recently performed a song at like one of the Apple events. I don't know, the like
a keynote of sorts.
Apple keynote.
Where they like reveal a thing.
And it was a song that she, you know, made with Jack Antonoff. And it was confusing to me because it's a Lana Del Rey song that he helped produce. Mm-hmm. But, like, why does he even need to be there?
Yeah.
Right. He was literally just the producer.
You mentioned this in your piece where it's, like, the song Green Light, the Lord song, which is really a fun, great song. I feel like the first thing that happened, it was, like, one, he's in the music video, just, like, playing a piano.
Yeah.
But also
unnecessary.
Just everyone I know is like, oh, yeah, there's the Jack Antonoff Bridge. Like, everyone was just like, oh, yeah, there it is. And I get that it is a recognizable song, but I also love Lord.
Yeah.
And I just want to talk about Lord.
I don't know. It just seems kind of like, and I want to respect the fact that, like, these women chose to work with him.
Right.
Yeah.
But I just don't think you can say in one breath that you love supporting women, you love giving women the center stage in the recording studio, and then also continually appear in their music videos and SNL performances and give interviews about how involved you were in the process.
Right.
And I just don't know if you can have both things, which is, you know, I think what I was trying to get at in this piece is like, no matter how much of a good guy you say you are or how much of an ally you present yourself to be, the title of being a male producer is so loaded.
Yeah, totally.
And you can talk about like how many choices Lord made. Mm-hmm. But if you want to be a part of that conversation about how the album was made, as opposed to say like Max Martin, who is a very famous Swedish producer who works with every pop star ever, who like doesn't give any press.
Yeah. Right.
People are going to refer to you as the reason for these artists' success.
Right.
And,
yeah. I mean, and it's not entirely Jack Antonoff's fault. It's sort of like also the way that our culture rewards men for even the accomplishments of women.
I mean, yeah, Maddie, what you were saying about the sort of like the Jack Antonoff bridge, I mean, I think he's just taking a page out of Phil Spector's playbook.
Hopefully without the murder.
I did not mean to imply that Jack Antonoff will murder somebody.
Well,
but
it is interesting. Not speaking of murder, but speaking of implications.
Sure.
How he is, like, rumored to have had relationships with a lot of the women he works with, where it's, like, he's supposedly dating Lana Del Rey, maybe.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
That's, I mean, that, again, is very much alleged.
a whisper, if
and then
you
of
will.
Course, like surrounding Lorde, there was the whole thing where, like,
I mean,
and if anybody actually went and saw them at the Barclays Center when
as you did,
Lorde
I
performed,
believe. Yes,
they were stupid.
Allegedly.
They like
you got some.
They really put
vibes?
Like
you got some like shtup vibes though.
They really italicized the word allegedly, so it's like allegedly.
Mm.
They sang a cover of St. Vincent's New York, and like they were sitting so close that their knees were touching, and they were like staring at each other.
No need to
so
touch
weird.
Knees during a piano time song.
But yeah. That's another thing too. It's like, can't he recognize that that's like. A little weird. Like, I
mean,
not.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
I did kind of love when she was like, everybody, New York native. and then, like, you like, who's it going to be? Like, you know, and then it's just like, Jack.
Isn't he from New Jersey?
He's from New Jersey, and he lets everyone know.
He's obsessed with being
loves
from
New
Jersey.
Yeah.
This was sort of just like, this was the Brooklyn, I don't know. I think it was like he grew up 10 blocks from here.
Yeah.
And, like, you just, like, think it's going to be someone that's actually,
like from
cool,
New York.
And it's like,
and it's fucking Jack Antonoff, Lena Dunham's ex from New Jersey.
Yeah, and then at one point he tried to like diss Lorde by saying, Ella eats bodega sushi. And it was just like an in joke.
Oh, like a thing between like a...
Like clearly she like while they were working like got sushi from the bodega.
Ugh, this man really, really fucking bothers me.
I just think it's very... It was just like one of those things where I was just like, oh my God, what are we watching?
It's
like, I think I was like, actually had my hands on my face.
Because
so
like,
I was like,
I mean, that's just stuff that is not for the eyes of the public.
I do think, like, you know, like romantic rumors aside, like, I do think he cultivates this kind of like ooey gooey, like slumber party.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Vibe of the recording studio. And
like,
it's like, no, like, we're like, so, we're close, we're friends.
Pajamas.
But then I'm like, then why? Do I feel like when people talk about the music that these women make, like, you're just always there? I don't know.
Just, like, lurking in the corner, like, hello.
It sort of brings the light of, like, how much credit should he get, you know, in that it's, like, definitely some.
No, of course.
Yeah.
The producer should get credit.
He has, like, a touch for sure for, like, making pop music.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to, like, entirely blame him for this because it's, like, yeah, he's, like, a talented person who's not entirely undeserving of attention or accolades, but also he upsets me on a personal level.
Yeah, he upsets me on, like, a cellular level. Jack
it's just
Antonoff.
That thing where it's, like, I think if you want to be, like, a hashtag feminist ally, which I do, not all producers want to be that.
That's true.
And he's clearly someone who wants to be that.
Right.
Because he talks about how much he loves women.
Working
in
with
so
women.
Many
right.
interviews. And I think if you want that, then you need to be aware of your voice and how bright the spotlight is on
for
your
sure.
contributions.
Right.
I also truly do not, am not implicating Jack Antonoff in this. I just
no.
want to be very, very clear.
I'm ready.
oh, God.
I know.
Again, this whole
alleged.
No, I mean, this is not even at all
okay.
about him
okay.
at
oh,
all.
I'm still braced for impact.
But
yes.
it's like, I do have this thing with like outspoken male feminists where I'm just like,
oh, yeah.
Give it 2 months and there's going to be
yes.
10 rape allegations against him. And
no.
usually I'm right.
I mean,
but again, I like have never heard anything like
same.
That about Jack Antonoff. And I am someone who—
Are you an insider?
I'm not an insider, but I am a bit of a like a Varys from Game of Thrones, and
oh,
I just like
a,
to collect my
a whisper,
secrets.
A whisper master.
It's that thing where it's like when someone is so vocally like a male feminist and supporter of women,
mm-hmm.
there's always a catch.
It is sort of like a rock and a hard place situation because I think about sometimes with like women's rights, I'm like, why are women the only ones fighting for this? Why are
true.
Women the only one being
yes.
being vocal about
sure.
this? And then it's like you have someone
but then a man
like Jack Antonoff
talking.
And he isn't necessarily talking about women's rights, but he's talking about like uplifting women and then that's irritating. And so I guess this is just like the root of feminism, right? This is like the debate that we get into of like how much of a role can men have.
I mean, it's a fine line, and I feel like it's one that, like, honestly, for me at least, changes, like, every day.
I guess it's, do you make it about you, and do you make it your brand?
And he's made it his
he's
brand.
He's made it his brand.
And I think, you know, and I talk about this in my piece, like, there is a history. The male producer is, one, loaded with genius. Like,
yeah.
if a man's in the room, it doesn't matter if a woman's made the song entirely herself, the man's still going to get credit.
Right.
And then the male producer in history is also loaded with, like misogyny, like yeah. from like Phil Spector to like, you know,
Dr. Luke.
Mm. Yeah, there's a history of like control and manipulation and assault. And so I think Antonoff is very aware of that history.
Right.
And I think he actively works to combat that stereotype.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I believe that bad male behavior exists on a spectrum.
For sure.
You don't
Love
have
that.
To be a rapist to be a bad man. I still think that the way he positions himself in the press and the attention that he gets for what he does in the studio still makes him bad.
Yeah.
I think for me, it just makes him cloying.
Yeah. He's annoying.
I mean, we're spending like a lot of time on him. But, you know, like we have been saying, it's a long-held problem. Or not problem, it's just, I mean, I guess it's a fly in the ointment.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. It's just like,
it's like an assumption.
It can be a problem. So, like, again, we have someone like Dr. Luke, who also was positioned as someone who, like, not uplifts women, but sort of the brilliant mind behind some great pop songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then he probably sexually assaulted his musicians.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
And again, I only say probably for legal reasons.
Yeah.
You in your piece mentioned Dev Hynes, who produced a lot of Solange's music and how people have really given him a ton of credit for it, which she has pushed back on.
Yeah, suddenly, like, Solange makes an album with Dev Hynes, and I like Dev Hynes, but he produced, you know, an album, or co-produced with Solange her album True, and suddenly reviews were saying that she was his vocal muse, which gets into this other problem that happens. Suddenly you're reduced to just being a vocalist rather than a writer and a producer.
Right.
And so, yeah, that was another example of, you know, the way women's work gets erased in the music press. Because, again, if a man's in the room, he's going to get all the credit, even if you look at the liner notes and it's co-written, co-produced.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I know, like, they actually had kind of a falling out surrounding
that. They did, yeah.
I think they're, like, friends again.
I think they are.
But, like, because of that narrative, they definitely went their separate ways for a while.
The Pitchfork review of True, they said, Hynes has met an ideal female vocal muse in Solange who executes each cut with simple grace and yearning naivete.
Yeah, but that's another thing, too. It's, like, executes.
Yeah, like, he has the whole vision. She is merely, like, the vessel for his fucking brilliant genius. And so all she's going to do is sing, and then he gets all the fucking praise. I hate everyone.
Also, guess what, Dev? She did the Proud Family theme song without you.
She did.
She did.
She didn't need his ass.
But again, I like Dev Hynes also. He is definitely someone who seems to enjoy being in the background a little bit more than being in the foreground.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jack Antonoff just seems like he's never been told, like, it's okay to not.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
That's all it is. It's like, just,
yeah.
You
but
can,
I think that's a disease that, like, a lot of our generation has.
You know? I'm leaving now.
Yeah.
like, it's misguided to only focus on him.
I'm so sorry, Jack.
Megan is just on a tear. I don't hate Jack Antonoff. I think the point of my piece was just, like, I just want you to watch yourself about how you speak about your work. And I also want people who write about those artists
to just be aware of
themselves.
Yes.
Everybody watch
yourself. Everyone watch themselves.
Fucking just take care of your shit.
I'm going to read something that you wrote, Hazel.
Ooh.
So in her piece, Hazel wrote, "That's traditionally how it's worked. The history of pop music made by women but produced by men is often one of erasure. Women may be the stars of their music, their names alone listed on their songs, but the men who write, produce, or mix for them, even as a collaboration, are seen as puppeteers who guide them, and in the worst case, Svengalis. Phil Spector to the Ronettes, Max Martin to Britney Spears, Timbaland to Aaliyah, Dr. Luke to Kesha."
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, too, that there aren't a lot of female producers working. I mean, it's probably because of opportunity, I would guess, and because of what you can do from, like, as far as a music standpoint.
Right.
It's, like, another one of those things that could probably be somewhat fixed or at least offset by bringing more diverse voices into the production room. And, you know, music would get more interesting.
Yeah, I also think women are maybe moving to self-produce more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, you know, certainly Solange is a good example of someone who I think when she went to do A Seat at the Table, she learned from how Dev Hynes was treated untrue and kind of took over the reins a little more.
Yeah, I was like, fuck
explicitly.
It.
A seat at the soundboard.
Sure.
Could, she took a seat at the table, literally, in the studio.
At the thingy with the what's it called?
Mixing board.
The sliders.
I mean, there are women producers, it's just they're not getting invited into those rooms the same way men are, especially at, like, the top tier of, like, pop music.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing, too. It's, like, Jack Antonoff is continually positioned as, like, a different kind of producer.
Right.
And
he's like soft.
I feel like he's just like the other guys.
The same shit in a different coat.
He just likes to talk about working with women a lot.
Yeah. Oh boy. It's fun to dissect another world that is mostly controlled by men.
I could do this my whole life.
Again.
And we probably will. We probably will until we die.
Hazel, do you have any final thoughts that you would like to share?
Just that Fifth Harmony song Dope, which was not on the album, but was a bonus track that Jack Antonoff produced, is a very good song.
Thank you, Hazel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that. Great. Good to know.
I also agree that the Taylor Swift song you mentioned in your article.
I wish you would.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Is underrated.
Yeah.
So good job on that.
I don't engage with
Thanks,
Taylor
Jack.
Swift.
Be quieter in interviews.
Yeah, Jack. Shh.
But Hazel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We love to have you. Thank you so much for listening to Dirtcast, and thank you to Hazel Sills. This episode was produced by Rachel Withers and was mixed by Jamie Colazzo. Majina Mofidi is our executive director of audio. Our theme music is by Stuart Wood. If you want to send us a tip or just let us know what you think, hit us up at dirtcast@jezebel.com. You can find us on Spotify, NPR One, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.